You're listening to the Ruhi Sleep, Sleep in Society podcast, recorded in Kingston, Ontario, Canada. Welcome back to another exciting episode of the Ruhi Sleep, Sleep in Society podcast. This is another week where we have a real treat. And that's the thing about this podcast that I think I've probably enjoyed the most is the multitude of guests that Ruhi has been able to have conversations with. Take it away, Ruhi.
Thank you, Mike. I'm delighted to have Ron Lehnhorst with us in the studio. And welcome to Sleep in Society podcast.
Thank you. Glad to be here, Ruhi.
Please, can you tell me a little bit about your career as a police officer?
Yeah.
Can we just have a little bit of your history and background?
For sure. Yeah. I retired from policing about 4 years ago, and I was a police officer for the City of Kingston for 32 years. And it was a dream job for me. As a young 21-year-old, and
you were 21 years old.
21 years old.
Wow.
So I was quite fortunate at the time to get hired. And actually, I always thought that my motivation and desire to work outweighed my lack of experience.
Oh, okay. And
I'm not sure if that was the case, but that's how I felt.
And so this is, you were in the police for 33 years or 32?
32 years, 30. Yes.
And for how long were you a shift worker? How many years did you spend doing shift work?
I would have been 28 years of my career, various shifts. There was a 6-year time period close to the end where it was mostly straight days and weekends off. And that was as I edged into my 50s, but...
It came later.
Came later.
Okay.
Came later. Some of that was by design, because as I got older, shift work became more and more difficult for me.
Okay. When did you begin to notice that it was becoming? Were you? May I ask a question?
Yes.
I ask
absolutely.
All shift workers this question is about their chronotype. Chronotype is referred to something, your circadian preference, and
yes.
I'll explain what that is.
Yes.
Whether you are a morning person or whether you were an evening person.
Yes.
Do you recall what chronotype you were? Were you a night owl or a...
Definitely a night owl.
Oh,
and
okay.
Still am.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah, which is not conducive to what I'm doing now, but yeah. I definitely do, I'd say I was a night owl for sure.
So shift work was somewhat at the beginning... was tolerable?
I would say for me, it was about the first 12 to 15 years. It was good. It was, I enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm.
I preferred to work nights as opposed to day shifts. Much more interesting, different client base, I'll say.
Mm-hmm.
The people I worked with were great. Always a new challenge. And yeah, I would say with the first 15 years. Now, I also worked as a young... teen, I'm going to say around 13 or so. My dad owned his own small business, and being first generation Canadian, I had a volunteer job up until I was probably 16.
And may I ask what the job was?
Yeah, my dad owned an office cleaning business, so therefore I volunteered at an office cleaning business, and Friday nights we're working till 3 or 4 in the morning, and it just the way it was.
Yes.
But it also... gave me a good experience for working nights as well.
Mm-hmm. And did you find, like, was when you were that, do you recall when you were that young that that was like an okay thing? You were totally into it and you didn't feel the effects in terms of being tired or anything like that?
No.
As a teenager or when you started in your early 20s?
Yeah. I recall as a teen back then, other than not being able to hang out with my friends on a Friday night, I didn't have much difficulty. You know, it was somewhat exciting, you know, being downtown and, you know, as a young, you know, teenager, it's like a lot of interesting sights.
Mm-hmm.
And early on in my policing career as well, I had no trouble sleeping. I could, you know, go to bed at 9 in the morning and sleep for 8 hours straight and get up and feel great.
And when did that begin to change?
Again, probably around the 15-year mark.
Mm-hmm.
We had, my wife and I had children then, and... we had a different setup as far as looking after the children. where on her job, she was able to take or schedule her work around my shifts. Mm-hmm. So the days that I was off, she would go to work. But there were times in that where I would finish at 8 o'clock in the morning and get right home and be with the children until their nap time.
Oh, which was when?
And that was probably around the 10, 12-year mark of my career.
So, how old were your kids at this point when you would be going home and waiting for them to have a nap? How
old around the age of two.
Okay.
Around the age of two. So.
Okay. So your wife would be gone in the morning. She would leave for her job.
I would come home. She would leave.
Yeah. You would come in and you would be awake until it was time for them to have a nap.
Yes.
And then you would nap for how long with them?
As long as they napped. And fortunately, they were good sleepers. So they would nap for a couple of hours. And then when Hope, my wife, came home, I would try to catch a few more hours sleep. Prior to going in for example, a midnight shift. If it was a 5 p.m. to 3 p.m. shift, well, that was pretty much it for the day. But it was a choice that we made, and I do not regret that. I got to raise my kids and hang out with them, and you know, I thoroughly enjoyed that aspect.
Yeah. No, I was saying we had a podcast with the nurses the other day, and we were talking about that, and I was saying that even though my background is in sleep and I've been embedded in sleep for over two decades, it's very interesting knowing everything you know, yet it doesn't somehow, when it comes to the actual reality of it or applying things in the reality of the situation, it's so different.
So true.
You know, the fact that I would come home really late, when I would come home, I would make breakfast for my children, take them to school in blazing sunlight, which we now know one must never do that.
Yes.
You should have your dark blue blockers, your glasses on, make sure you have big hats on, because that's not the way to go, because your circadian system is going to get activated, going to start to wake you up, regardless of how tired you are, and going to compromise the quality of your sleep. Even though that's in the background, that's not, you know, you don't recall, like you can't remember, or you forget, or you're in this situation in a, maybe in a constant state of fogginess. And I think off the record, you and I were talking about this cognitive fogginess that comes with the shift work, which was my experience as I got, as I had children.
Because
once I had my child, things changed dramatically. My experience of nights, which was, I was also a night person.
Yes.
I wanted to work nights because that was my thing.
Yes.
I was more alert. I was a late chronotype, which means I got really activated late at night.
Yes.
And then, but the cognitive fogginess that came with having children and having these shifts that didn't give you enough break or recovery time at all in between, like my, you know, day shifts, because it was day shifts and night shifts and day shifts and maybe two, three recovery days, which is now we know is not enough, that you need more than 5 to 6 days of recovery in between your rotating shifts, which wasn't the case back then. How, may I ask what your shift schedule was like?
Most of my shift were 10-hour days followed by 10-hour nights, and we did that two different rotations. And then we did all our midnight shifts in a row, and it was seven midnight shifts, which were 8 hours.
In a row?
In a row.
Oh, my gosh.
Usually by the fifth one, and especially again after my 15-year mark, it became more and more difficult. I would sleep maybe 2 hours, get to bed about 9 o'clock in the morning, and just suddenly wake up at 11, hoping it was 11 p.m. and it's 11 a.m. But it was like a cannon had gone off in the room and just...
Wide awake,
policing background, you know, we all have that fight or flight. Well, in policing, you can't run, so you go towards it. So it would be as if someone was breaking into my house. Well, never the case, but now I'm awake, and I stayed awake the rest of the night, the rest of the day, and occasionally would try to go sleep at night, but it was no point. So I would pretty much coast by that entire 7 day shift with just 2 hours sleep per night.
How did you, what were your mechanisms of coping? That's a lot. That's
I learned that I started experimenting with different foods, and I found the only food that I could really eat in that time period was breakfast type foods.
May I ask what mm-hmm. time were you consuming breakfast type food and what that breakfast yeah. type food looked like?
Back then, in my diet's a little bit different mm-hmm. now, but back then it was always, eggs were good, toast mm-hmm. was good. The more bland, the better. Mm-hmm. But anything, a healthy protein in a salad where there's mm-hmm. the last things that I wanted.
You wanted carbs.
And as I learned later on, the body's yes, craving carbs to cope with that, which yeah. totally explained why.
Why, exactly. Yeah. Because there are these hormones in your body called leptin and ghrelin that go AWOL at night. And especially with shift workers.
Yes.
And we're going to go deep into this coming up in our future podcast. So we're going to go into diet.
Interesting.
But that's why shift workers have a strong tendency towards like craving. And it's not just shift workers, anybody who's sleep deprived, actually.
Yes.
Sleep deprivation does the same thing. It's shift workers have an added thing where our rhythms are skewed.
Mm-hmm.
And because we become arrhythmic, that's an added thing because our clocks, our internal body clocks, desynchronize from our master clock. So everything is going wow. towards, I know, it's,
wow.
I know, things we do to ourselves. But that's why shift workers have a tendency for craving carbs and craving sugars. And then there is no control. We don't. Our regulation, the self-regulation process itself is compromised.
Yes.
So if we were not aware of all these things, you would be like, oh, my body's wanting that.
Mm-hmm.
So I want that. So that's...
That's certainly... And I wish I had known that information ahead of time. I learned through, reading a book when I was working midnights, and it mm-hmm. talked about the danger of not sleeping and in the body craving carbohydrates. And someone that was like to think I'm competitive in sports, I was always conscious of my diet.
Mm-hmm.
And yet I knew what was very healthy. And just at times it was just toast and peanut butter.
Mm-hmm. Because you also needed to eat.
I had to eat mm-hmm. and I couldn't stomach anything that was, like a big healthy chicken salad or something.
What would happen? What was the thing? Would you get nauseous? Like, what was...
There was always a constant state of feeling somewhat nauseous, especially if I ate something that wasn't carbohydrates. Mm-hmm. If I tried to eat healthier and then go to work, it would cause that. Certainly around the 3 o'clock in the morning mark as well, where I just knew I should probably eat something, mm-hmm. had no desire. And yet, I'd still squeeze in a workout in my lunch break, knowing I'd have to... replenish mm-hmm. and usually it'd be like a protein shake or something. But, even that, as long as it was bland tasting, it was better.
And because it didn't sit well with you?
It didn't sit well. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And again, more of an upset stomach, touch of nauseous, that mm-hmm. sort of feeling. But, I guess the body adapts and you just function.
Yeah, or we don't know. We pretend that we create an illusion.
Yes.
We think it's functioning, but in reality,
it's actually very true.
We really started paying attention to it. You just go, oh, this is actually not really working out, but I can't, because there is no other way out. So we just go. It's like living with chronic pain. You're like, got to live with this. This is just the way it is. It's just there.
Yeah.
And therefore, if I start paying too much attention to it, it just creates more stress. You are an athlete. You during your policing
yes.
as well. You were an athlete, and you are an athlete right now too.
I compete in cycling, mm-hmm. mountain biking, some road bike. Recently, fairly recently, I started running because someone who I thought was my friend signed me up for a marathon. So
yes.
I began marathon training and it went okay.
Yeah.
It went okay. So I was able to run the Boston Marathon a couple of years ago, actually.
Oh, wow.
As a result, yeah.
When was this?
That was in 2018 when they had the heavy rains mm-hmm. and heavy winds and the cold temperatures, and it was epic.
You did it. That's a tough marathon. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. The Bostonians are just incredible. They're mm-hmm. incredible people. I was cold running,
mm-hmm.
and they're cheering for me like I was winning, and I was essentially mid-pack nobody. It was incredible.
I think that's amazing.
Yeah.
That's extraordinary.
An extraordinary experience.
To be able to take on something like that is pretty amazing.
It was a challenge for sure.
Yeah,
for
congratulations.
Sure. Thank
again.
You.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So going back to your you being an athlete during your shift work years, may I ask how you balanced being an athlete, being a shift worker, compromised sleep, compromised eating, all of those things? How did that?
I would say that during those, especially midnight shift or other time periods when I was working nights and feeling very tired, my workouts, and we were fortunate that we could work out most times if it wasn't too busy or enough workers on the road.
Did you have a gym?
We had a gym at Kingston Police. And going back to when we had the building where the K-Rock Center is across the street, or the Leon Center.
Yes, now. Yes.
And it was a pretty rustic gym, but...
I remember that.
yeah. So early on in my career, I made proposals to keep buying new gym equipment. And actually, if you've seen the new gym for the new building, and compliments too to the former deputy chief that opened up a big, huge space, but I'd say it's one of the best gyms for a police agency in the province.
Oh, wonderful. And you have a lot to do with it.
I helped. I helped. I did what I could to help for sure. And I would say that Kingston has probably the most fit officers in the province of Ontario, which makes me feel great.
Well, it makes us feel good too.
Yeah.
Knowing our officers are fit.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And, and sorry, going back to actually answering your question, I would work out and do what I could, but a lot of the times I would just jump on a treadmill with light dumbbells and just start moving and walking at a fast pace just to make that mind-body connection that this is happening, even though my brain is telling me to lie down. I'd have to be careful and not do any exercises that consisted of lying down, you know, like a bench press or curls, because my first thought was just put your head back and just sleep. So I'd have to push through that. It was difficult to do the aerobic piece to it, so I'd really focus on the aerobic piece on my days off.
May I ask why?
I didn't have the energy. I didn't have the energy to do it, actually. We had treadmills, we had rowing machines, but I found that if it was a more explosive sort of weightlifting exercise, that I seemed to get more benefit from it, and I seemed to wake up, which I... and make me feel good too as well. And it was a two-part benefit too, that I feel that if you were policing or any other job where you're wearing a uniform, that your duty is to be as fit as possible.
Absolutely.
Whatever that is for you. But and there's responsibility too, not just to my family, but also to my coworkers, that I'm able to do to my capability as well, right? It protects, you know, protect people is part of the rule. So I took that seriously as well, as did a lot of my coworkers, which was great. Occasionally we'd work out together and make sure supporting one another too as well. What was great for the next 2 hours after the workout, I felt good.
Okay. And what happened after?
As the sun came up, then you start to feel the crash.
Yeah.
And then it became difficult the last couple of hours of the shift. And
Around what time?
For me, it depended on summertime. It wasn't as bad with the sun coming up. Yeah. It seemed to wake me up. But winters were where it stays dark. And just you start to really feel that, fatigue, you know, a bit of a brain fog. And when I was younger, I could drink coffee up until 7 a.m. and then go to bed. And as I matured in life, I could no longer do that.
I can't do that anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And could you at one time?
Cut off. Oh, I did. Actually, part of the study, which now is it in its 10th year, where I've recorded almost everything that I do. Part of it was that I was in the very beginning where I didn't understand, like, because, you know, that's part and process of taking caffeine is to stay alert.
Yes.
And I would be having a cup of tea here and there and then being able to go to sleep and fall asleep without actual problems.
Yes.
But I don't know if you really truly looked into my sleep itself, where the quality of sleep was, because it's the quality that can get impacted as well, right? But now I have to be very careful about the cutoff time for caffeine when I'm doing night shift, because I can't do it post, like, if I am fatigued, which I am, because now I've added burdens of, like, in terms of aging comes insomnia with women especially, and then if that's the part and process of that night where I've been experiencing insomnia prior. Because I can't now, my training is changed completely because of the added insomnia. As you know, I am Absolutely. Working on a slow movement training right now.
Yes.
Deconstructing everything I have known and I've been doing for the past 8.5 years.
Mm. Wow.
And reconstructing an entire new exercise regime because of the increased inflammation, and just being very mindful about when I need to train and how I need to train.
That's excellent.
And then, which is a long-term process. Like, it's not an overnight thing. It's like now, it's fifth month now, this new experiment that I've set out for myself. But the point being that I cannot ingest coffee as I used to,
yeah.
and I cannot train at the level that I used to, and I have to be very particular about my timing, which I was as well prior, but now it's changed completely in itself. And to me, it's fascinating. I'm not as devastated as I was like a few years back when things started to fail.
Mm-hmm.
But, or I shouldn't say fail. They weren't working as well as they used to because I didn't understand the body was changing as well, right?
Like success things, gets, yeah. looks differently.
Yeah, it is. It's a different thing. But you are training, you were training as an athlete as well,
mm-hmm.
right? Like you were cycling at that.
At that particular time, yeah. It was more mountain biking.
Mm-hmm.
And I would have to wait. Certainly not during the midnight shifts. I mm-hmm. wouldn't do that. But on the 6 days off that we mm-hmm. get after that, the first day was always a write-off.
Rest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
More so forced myself to get out of bed after 4 hours sleep because
yeah.
I wanted to be available for my kids
of
the next
course.
Day.
And, yes.
And my wife as well. And as you said earlier, actually, it took about until we would finish Friday morning at mm-hmm. 8 o'clock and to about Monday night before I actually started to feel good, sometimes on Tuesday.
Yeah, it takes like, and the longer we work in this, the longer we are in shift work, the longer the recovery time, I find.
I certainly
it becomes longer.
That.
And then knowing what I know in terms of the science now, that
mm-hmm.
I've developed this background in advanced circadian rhythms and stuff, I realize that also for me, I require resetting. Like I need for me to remember where my circadian clock is. So every once in a while, I need to take a longer break from my work period to reset my circadian clock.
Interesting.
To know, to have a memory of where it is and where I need to be. And when we don't get those kinds of recovery times, then the systems are in perpetually desynchronized state. And if we are internally desynchronized, then that has an impact on how we are with our family, how we are with our community. Can we talk a little bit about your work-life balance, please?
It's a good question. I was trying to recall that, actually. I was talking with my daughter last night, actually.
Yes.
She lives in Toronto, and I was texting
yeah.
her. I said,
do you remember?
Do you remember how was I on night shift and, you know, those times where, mm-hmm. You know, I'd get up and look after you and your brother.
Mm-hmm.
How was my patience level?
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was great. And her response was occasionally there were times where, yeah, you were kind of grumpy. And I apologize for that. But,
mm-hmm.
of course, being the mature adult that she is, she
mm-hmm.
said, no, totally understandable. But, you know, I was a little disappointed in myself, looking back. But at the same time, I totally understand, you know, people that are on shift work
mm-hmm.
and the patience isn't what it is after, you know, some sustained good quality
no,
sleep.
Because your humanity is being chopped off one bit at a time. It's hard to
yeah.
retain that. When
you had mentioned on your podcast
mm-hmm.
or maybe on your website about a slow violence.
It is.
I'd
an
never
act
heard
of slow
that
violence.
Term.
Mm-hmm.
And it's quite accurate.
Yes, it
so
is.
It's quite accurate.
Yeah.
But
I have another term for it, and I say I'm not brave enough yet to use that term.
Okay.
Because somebody said to me, they said, oh, don't you find that slow violence is like, it's a little harsh? And I'm like, oh, I don't think it's harsh enough. Like, because it's when it comes and you don't even know where it's coming from
yeah.
and how it starts to get to you. it develops over such a long time, you don't even know when it started.
That's interesting.
Or where you're at with it. And yeah, absolutely.
I remember when I first started, some of the more veteran officers, I had 20 years on, and they were on my shift, and you know, I was a rookie or younger, you know, a couple of years on, and they would come to work, and so I slept 2 hours. That's all I could sleep. And I'm in my head, I'm thinking, well, why is that? I can go right to bed and sleep for 8 hours straight. Mm-hmm. And then I, fast tracking, but I got to about that same time period, and the same thing happened. And so I knew it wasn't just me. I realized that the officers that were older than myself and had experienced the same thing. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I'm not really entirely sure what the solution is. I back then, melatonin in Canada wasn't available. So I actually went across to the States and tried some, but I didn't like the, well, I think one of the effects was vivid dreams. Mm-hmm. And it was too vivid that I found it disturbing. And
oh, you had vivid dreams on melatonin.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a very, it's subject matter that I haven't delved into right now, which I'm planning on upcoming in the future podcast to actually bring the science of melatonin.
Interesting.
Because you have to be very careful about taking that kind of medication, period. And also it's depending upon where you are with your circadian clock. It can either advance the clock or it can delay the clock. And if you don't know where your circadian clock is at the begin with,
oh my goodness.
You know,
yes.
Like with shift workers, it's so desynchronized. You're like, oh, when am I supposed to do this when I don't even know where my clock is at?
Yes.
And then another thing about that is dosage as well. What dosage should a person be taking? And then the purity of the subject.
Yes.
And then you have companies that are coming up that are selling products, highly caffeinated products, energy drinks.
Oh, my goodness.
And the same companies, yes, are now promoting, you know, melatonin drinks. Like, so, yeah, they bump up your energy and then take melatonin to bring yourself
down.
It's like it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
And I think that's where it's really important to have very clear scientific data about this sort of stuff, so we are very clear about, because you know, melatonin is off the counter as well.
Yes.
To fully understand the impact of this on human circadian systems and human system, because you know, the more data we have, more evidence we have, and more we bring it out to the public, the better it is, and then people can make informed decisions. It's really, really important.
Yes.
For us to be able to be informed about these things so we can make informed decisions about that.
Yeah, the literature definitely was not there back then.
Mm-hmm.
We tried it for a short period of time and then just went back to just trying to cope.
Mm-hmm. And coping for you was also, part of it was exercising.
Very much, actually. And for me, too, every time I, even back then, every time I worked out, it became a mental health session as well. It just made me feel better mentally, mm-hmm, as well as physically. And it's still currently, that's one of my motivations, too, where if I don't feel like working out, I know that I'm going to feel a lot better afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
And human nature, perhaps, I'm not sure. I think, you know, the body likes to conserve energy. But,
The brain is always going to tell you, brain's going to tell you, just stop. Like, why,
yes,
are you doing this to yourself? Like, I remember my 2 o'clock in the morning training.
Absolutely.
This 2 o'clock in the morning,
yes,
when I trained, that's exactly, my brain would be coming at me and I had to develop entire systems to block that.
Yes.
Mess, because it's so powerful, right? At,
mm-hmm,
that time of night, it's like, why? Why would you want to do this to yourself?
Yes.
You trained yesterday. Like, these things that, these voices that come in your head, and you're just like, not listening. And
I would definitely have to develop a routine where, mm-hmm, it's change as quick as I could,
mm-hmm,
put on some loud music in the gym,
I would actually get up and just start doing the stairs. I would go up and down 100 stairs 3 to 4 times.
Oh.
I would get up, start doing that,
yes,
and then start moving. And then I had programs written out. Like, I would have,
yes,
everything written out beforehand, so there was no messing about. I wouldn't be messing with this stuff. Like, this is what the program is going to be. This is my training for tonight. This is happening. And just so my go-to was always start with the stairs.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And then I had amazing co-workers who would be like, oh, time for your program, Ruhi.
That's awesome.
Let's get going. So,
yeah.
But yeah, the
motivation.
I do
the same thing on a treadmill. You know, with dumbbells, like, mm-hmm, just start moving the treadmill, elevate it, and, mm-hmm, just start moving.
Yeah, until without that, you didn't want to think and didn't want to listen to that.
Absolutely.
To the voice, because as you said, if you were to lie down, you would be like, yeah, my body's like, oh, good.
And I, well, I
horizontal, knew, that's where I need you to be.
Much better, much better. Yeah. And I knew if I didn't work out in my lunch hour, mm-hmm. that it was too busy at home. So mm-hmm. I would not work out for 7 days if I didn't work out in my lunch hour at midnight.
Oh, really?
So,
at midnight. This is like we want to make clear the public understands. This is at midnight. This is not noon.
This is not noon. This is about 3 in the morning.
Yeah. So you're doing your training at 3 in the morning.
3 in the morning.
I did
on
it
at
2 in the morning. Yeah.
Yeah. On the evening shift, it wasn't as bad mm-hmm. because it'd be around 9 or 10 o'clock at night, mm-hmm. which certainly when I had up to 15 years on was not difficult. Mm-hmm. As I got older, I guess, it became more difficult to do it at that time period, but I still would.
And how were you feeling post, like as you, in terms of aging and in terms of working out that late at night? How was that? And I want to be very clear, there are gender differences between men and women in terms of training, like how vigorously men can train in terms of how vigorously women can train. And also, when you're tired, the oxidative capacity, like how much oxygen intake you can take, is very different from when you're rested in terms of like sports training.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah. For me, again, that's probably why on midnight shifts, I did not do my aerobic type training, like the mm-hmm. running or the cycling. And we had an indoor an indoor bicycle as well as a treadmill at the station, and that was only a warm up on the treadmill. I would say again, save that for mm-hmm. my days off because it just wasn't there.
Yeah.
The energy just was not there, and the quality, the pace, it became more frustrating. Whereas mm-hmm. with the strength training, I found that at least I got that feedback right away. And my brain seemed to wake up for a couple of hours as well.
Mm-hmm. Any injuries?
Not that I recall. Mm-hmm. I was very smart, I think. You know, I read as much as I could, made mm-hmm. sure my form was as strict as possible. Mm-hmm. But definitely a reduction in the amount of weight. You know, probably about a 20% reduction on midnight shifts as to what I would normally lift. Mm-hmm. And for me, it was for that reason.
Yeah.
A lot of times you'd be working out alone in the gym too as well.
Yeah.
And so I would use dumbbells.
And you had athletic background as well and you were
yes.
as an athlete. Yeah, it took me about a year and a half because I got into exercise science shortly. First I started training, then I needed to know what I was doing, how I was doing it, because it became very academic, very sort of fast. And then
yes.
the way for me to understand exercise wasn't from shift work perspective, because there's very limited data in terms of shift work and night training, very limited data, handful of studies, basically.
Interesting.
So I needed to get into exercise science. So I got into sports science to understand everything about exercise, and especially understanding of form, because I did get injured significantly, which kind of put a kibosh on my training for a while.
Oh, very much. Mm-hmm. Very much.
And then everything else around it as well.
Now, I will say that as I, near the end of my career, I started to develop a few injuries as well. But I believe a lot of that was from carrying all the equipment that we carry.
Mm-hmm.
So the posture is not what it needs to be. And I actually had an impinged nerve. I've never had that experience in my life, and it was the most intense, debilitating pain I've ever had. And I think part of that was from wearing gun belts and mm-hmm. wearing the equipment that we have to carry. That's been developed in the sense now, too, where you see a lot of officers now carrying a lot of equipment on their vests, on their chest.
Oh, so that changed.
That changed.
And you think the likelihood of that changing is because of the form.
Lower
it
back
compromised
injuries.
Lower yeah. back injuries in
Most
police officers.
Most officers have some degree mm-hmm. of lower back discomfort.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe a lot of it is from that, too, as well. And you sit differently in the cruisers because of the equipment on your...
Indeed. Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
I didn't think
about that. The stance is different.
Yeah.
You know, you'll see the officer's
the ergonomics,
interview stance.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's one thing I've had to learn to change mm-hmm. in my civilian career now, is that to not be in a defensive type stance, because
yeah.
that's what you're accustomed to as well. So,
what is a defensive type stance?
If you've taken boxing, mm-hmm. like a boxing sort of stance, you're If you're right-handed, your right foot is back. And in policing, it's your gun is furthest away from the person that you're talking to.
Okay.
So it's more of a bladed
side stance. So you
have,
okay, I understand. So it's like you are in this position where one foot is forward and the other foot is slightly
exactly.
back. And then your weight would be on the
on
front
the back,
foot or
back
the back foot.
Foot. Back
so
foot.
Weight would be on the back foot
yep.
and where your gun is.
Yes.
And where the equipment is heavy to
yes.
begin with, which is interesting stat because that's different from a martial arts karate stance,
yeah.
which is both feet planted, facing one another,
yes.
knees slightly bent, core very, very tight,
yes.
which was, I think, one of the most significant lessons I learned in terms of martial arts was that particular stance.
And that's interesting.
A very powerful, powerful stance.
And that's what I teach now.
Yeah, yeah.
But
yeah, and let's talk about what you teach now
sure.
as our time is coming to an end because
okay.
I really want to, you are now training other human beings. Into,
yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, through my career, I met some wonderful people and one of them, I'm not sure if I've been permitted to say mm-hmm. names or not.
No, please.
Okay.
Yeah.
I started getting coached by Randy Zabukovic, mm-hmm. and he is a full-time professor, mm-hmm. so well, a former triathlete, but he also owns a training studio mm-hmm. at Focus Fitness. Mm-hmm. So with the courses I've had in the past and experience too, I'm now a personal trainer at this gym.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that we really emphasize at the gym too is functional training.
Yes, which is like big part of my life since about 2014
yeah.
has been functional movement training.
And you've probably noticed a difference in your posture.
Oh, and yes, absolutely.
Lower back discomfort
yeah.
and mm-hmm. just overall feeling better.
Yeah, I touch base with functional movement training every couple of years. Every couple of years,
yes.
I go back to get retrained
That's
because
excellent.
My body is changing as I'm aging.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
yeah, and each exercise involves the core muscles,
mm-hmm.
right? Strengthens, if you're strong in your core muscles, then generally you're strong overall.
Mm-hmm.
Try to emphasize the importance of the aerobic training as well, which is so huge for mental wellness.
Yes.
And everything else as well. I mean, the healthier you are, you know, we're experiencing a bit of a health crisis as well now.
Yes.
That I think it should emphasize the importance of be as fit as possible.
Yeah.
To
and
help
then,
yourself.
And my strong, I'm a big proponent in terms of physical training at a very young age. That
Absolutely.
Physical training, you know, the three basic foundations of well-being, basic, because as I'm going to continue to say, well-being is very, very complicated. But the basis is good sleep,
yes.
good diet, and exercise. And if those
that.
Things are compromised, then entirety of our being is compromised. And in most mm-hmm. human beings right now, it is compromised. And we're not putting enough emphasis on this in terms of like when we are educating our children, which should be part and parcel. That should be the basis actually from the very beginning of their education. It should be embedded in this and then everything else should
agree.
Come.
I definitely agree.
From there, yeah.
Create healthy individuals.
Yeah, and healthy society.
I also mm-hmm. find, for me, there is a link between aerobic activity and my quality of sleep as well.
Mm-hmm.
That those days that I have a long run or a long bike ride, I sleep really well at night as well. And
yeah.
I don't know if that's the mental well-being or just the body requiring it or maybe both.
No, well, actually, there is a study that came out that actually shows, you know, we talked off record on about we have our time's running out, but we talked about the metabolic equivalence,
yes.
METs. 600 is the basic,
yes.
which American Cardiovascular Association recommends, like 600 for your for a normal human being, just move, right? But it showed in terms of especially shift workers, it needs to be anywhere over 3,000 to 9,000 metabolic equivalents per week.
Fascinating area.
Yeah, and that's a massive amount. If, you know, people don't understand, that's a massive amount
mm-hmm.
of exercise that one requires to get, like, good quality of sleep, especially if you are a shift worker. And that's just a small, like, it wasn't that small a sample. Of about, you know, 10,000 people, 4,000 were shift workers, the rest were day workers. But still,
yes.
That's a lot of exercise that we need to do to get good quality of sleep. And if your systems are compromised, if you're not an athlete, if you don't know how to move them, that becomes a very hard process to be able to achieve as you are aging, if that's not a part and parcel of your
of who you are,
of your daily life, of
yes.
who you are,
yes,
part and parcel of your brain, like that's
yes.
you know, your behavior. That's a very difficult thing. And then to say, oh yeah, these are things you need and go figure yourself out, I think that's a very that's a difficult thing to do.
That's an area I'll have to look into as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think if perhaps you can come back in the future and we can further go deeper into this conversation, I would
enjoy that.
Very much appreciate it.
Well, thank you very much for this opportunity, Rui.
Oh, thank you, Ron, so much. Thank you for coming and talking so openly about your experience of shift work.
You're very welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Ruhi Sleep, Sleep and Society podcast, available on ruhisleep.ca. Don't forget to follow us on social media @RuhiSleep on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Thank you for listening.